What is actually the difference, when, for example, Russia goes to war, they go alone because they don't have allies. When America goes to wars, then, you know, a lot of us go with you and we lose our people on the way. So that means that you also need us in your, you know, to be this superpower. Because if you look at the bigger picture, I mean, in terms of economic might, I mean, China is a very, very powerful country in terms of military might as well. So what is the difference between you and the other superpowers so far is the allies.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the 19th of March, and this is going to be an In the Eyes of Truth update, that is Ukraine and other areas, not the Middle East. That video I shall be filming tonight. Over the past 2 days, obviously things are starting to heat back up. From just missile strikes there and back to actual infrastructure, major oil infrastructure. We'll cover that in the next video. So what do we got right now? On the front, everything is basically quiet, if you can call it that. This is due to the mud season. So what we see is Ukrainians are pushing through in Zaporozhye. They're pushing through diversionary units. Recon diversionary units that Russia is then countering and destroying, because these units they have to go on foot. You can't bring the vehicles in, and if you bring vehicles in, they have to be on hardened surfaces. Otherwise, they'll sink in the mud. In other parts of the front, Russia is doing the exact same thing. It's pushing through, clearing out fields, wood lines, up to the point where they hit a serious position, fortified area, which are mostly field fortifications these days. They're not the same fortifications as what we saw in the cities in the east that were steadily taken and overrun. We see that Russian forces get up to the villages, and mostly they stop outside the villages, again, because you cannot bring up heavy vehicles, you cannot bring heavy fire support. It's mostly done by small groups of infantry. Drones are a major pain. This time of year, the fog isn't as bad anymore. There's still a lot of foggy season. Heavy rains haven't kicked in, but the mud season is very much so on. Now, for those of you who are going to be asking, well, wait a minute, you know, World War II, we saw all these videos of massive tanks riding across frozen tundras or frozen fields and attacking into the Germans and so on, but we don't see this, anything like this, even during the winter in Ukraine. Well, there's two factors involved. First of all, the climate has gotten warmer, so the winters aren't as stable. Second of all, what most of those videos you were seeing in World War II, or the Great Patriotic War, were in the north. We're not talking about the territory of Ukraine. We're talking about the territory there in World War II. Most of the fighting was done during the summer months or during the late spring, early fall months, when the ground was basically pretty dry and any rains were point rains, area rains that didn't really saturate the ground into a real mud. But dried up relatively quickly. Thunderclaps, they bring down a lot of water, but it evaporates pretty quickly too off the ground. So the ground becomes muddy, but not that muddy, and then hardens up pretty fast again. That's what you're seeing. That's what you saw in World War II. So you're seeing the same thing here. Plus the climate, like I said, has gotten warmer. Planting season has moved up 2 weeks since compared to what, the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s. 80s, maybe even 90s. So you're not getting that heavy snowfall and hard freezes that you've had before. And again, most of what you're seeing from those videos from World War II were up further north. They were north in the Kursk Oblast and so on. There's a big difference in climate. I mean, when Moscow was minus 10, Donetsk was plus 3, plus 4, maybe falling into freezing at night. And that was, 3 weeks ago. And Moscow right now has gotten up to plus 14. It's averaging about plus 9, which is already about 5 degrees higher than normal historical norms for this time of year. So the climate has gotten warmer, which creates obvious problems. And during the mud season, you're not going to see any kind of big movements in any direction because you can't get the vehicles in. They will sink into that mud, as I've said many times before. And as somebody has tried to push vehicles out of that kind of mud, unless you've been in that, you have no idea how bad that is. It's much worse than clay, than that brown mud in Germany, where I've done the same thing and walked through. Hey, this is much worse. So you're not seeing heavy movements, and you can't see heavy movements because it's all basically infantry, and it's mostly small groups of reconnaissance and sabotage units, and small groups of infantry clearing out. Drones are a big problem, quite literally from both sides. There's anywhere between probably 1 to 5 drones per infantryman out there. Granted, most of the casualties are still not coming from drones, unlike what you've been led to believe. The majority of casualties are still coming from artillery, from bombs, from mortar rounds. That causes the majority of casualties. In fact, the thing about the Ukrainian units, particularly the units that are used in garrison position along the fortified areas, is they tend to run away when Russian infantry gets in combat close. And that's easy to explain because the majority of those guys, not these guys in the DRGs that are being pushed through in the different areas, but the guys that are used in the majority of the areas to garrison the fighting positions and the defensive are mostly people that have been drafted off the street. What I mean is beaten the crap out of and thrown into a van and tossed out with minimal, if any, training and minimal, if any, provisions and so on. So these guys are not exactly high morale. It's one thing to stand and hold a position and fire long distance. Another thing when Russian storm units are getting in close and they're getting within hand grenade range to stand there and fight because you're not experienced. You know, you're going to die. Surrendering in a battlefield is very difficult, especially when your side is more than happy to put a round into your back or drop a drone on your head, to make an example. And the Ukrainians do that very often. So people saying, oh, they could just surrender. They could surrender, but you know what I've noticed too is Ukrainians, they have this almost cattle-like mentality in that, okay, so you've got a blocking unit. You've got a couple of guys from one of these SS battalions. They're saying, we're going to shoot you in the back if you surrender. Oh, we're afraid to surrender, or we go out there and they shoot us in the back, and that happens too. Why don't you just kill them? Let's understand this. You got a couple guys that are keeping 10, 12 guys from surrendering and saving their lives, and these guys are so afraid they won't shoot these guys that are blocking forces. Kill them, and then go surrender. It's the same thing as what you see in the streets. A lot of these guys, you know, they get press ganged. Everybody else stands around looking. Well, it's not me today. Maybe tomorrow, but not today. As opposed to ganging up and which is starting to happen, but after 3 years, it's just starting to happen where they gang up and beat the crap out of these guys. It's mostly done by younger teenagers, 18, 19-year-olds that go in groups and are able to organize. The older men in Ukraine are absolutely unable to organize themselves. Though the gypsies sure as hell organized. There was a video that came out where one of these press gangs tried to grab some gypsy men and the whole village came down and beat the living crap out of them, destroyed their van. But I've got another hint. If you use force multipliers and you use them liberally on these guys, not their vehicles, they're not going to be able to come back because, oh, they'll be with, burning in hell with St. Bandera and not being able to come back and with the next group trying to get you, trying to pick you off one at a time. Force multipliers, they're effective, which is why if the U.S. ever has to go to press gang to get the draft going, like say one ground forces hit and get bogged down in a Korea 2.0, much, much worse, in Iran, these guys would be wiped out, especially in the South. If people in the South are so well armed, I think they wouldn't hesitate to put down Washington's agents of terror. If it came down to something like that, if Washington was to go down and use that kind of tactics that they've shown and helped Ukraine use. Whole different environment. But Ukrainians have a lot of weapons amongst them, because if you remember back in 22, they were handing out weapons left and right to anybody who wanted an assault rifle and grenades and so on to defend against the Russian invasion. So there's weapons everywhere. Plus, a lot of these guys have deserted. If they actually deserted, and I'll get to that in a moment, they left with their weapons. So there's a lot of weapons floating around Ukraine, which again comes down to why are these guys using any weapons to defend themselves, which just amazes me. Yes, something I really don't understand. I mean, you could put these guys into ambush positions. You know, until that is done, even just burning their vans, like there's some groups that do that, it doesn't do enough. They've continued to operate. They're making a lot of money off this, by the way. This is one of the reasons that they allow themselves to be filmed, so that others will come there. So for a white card right now, a white card that says you're not fit for duty or you have an exemption, is $10,000. If you get taken and you get taken to the station, so you're now starting to be processed, it's now $15,000. If you get to the medical commission, it's $20,000. Most Ukrainians obviously don't have that kind of money. Some do. This is for those that do, for them to come over there and go, okay, here's my money, give me the card. Doesn't always work, but it does most of the time. These guys are making, you know, there was one account that something like $5 billion has been siphoned out of the Ukraine economy just by these press gangs. So it's big business. Of course, they're going to back Zelensky. They're making money, and they're not being sent to the front. Of course, they have to make a quota in the end and pass some of the earnings up to the next chain level and the next chain, eventually to the government type, federal government types. So don't... Now, these guys, you know, they're not there because otherwise they'll get sent and what have you. They're there to make a lot of money. And it's only getting harder for Ukraine. All the Patriot missiles that have not been deployed inside Ukraine, anything that was on its way or in Poland waiting to be shipped down, that's all going to Israel, to defend Israel. And as the energy war, and now it's the energy war, an oil war, actually, is expanding, there's going to be a lot of problems. Ukraine military, which is stupid enough because they blocked the Druzhba pipeline, which goes to Hungary and Slovakia, and they've actually attacked, obviously, they've attacked the refineries with sabotage units, but 20% of their diesel was coming from Hungary and Slovakia. And that's something that's already been noted on the battlefield, is the Ukrainians are having a lot of problems with fuel. 20% of that diesel, that's a lot of diesel that just got cut off. There's a civilian diesel shortages and military diesel shortages. And no, Poland can't make up for it. Poland can give them electricity, but they can't make up for lack of diesel. So there's actual, some karma involved in this. And speaking of which, you know, threatening Hungary, threatening Orban's life, and that's bad enough, and then having his minions threaten to kill Orban's children and friends, saying we know where they, what restaurants they go to, we know where they sleep, we'll come get them. Obviously that's a threat to any European leader. If you don't kiss Zelensky's arse enough, he'll send his minions to go kill your kids. That should be something that should raise scare enough European morons, and then they're very limited intellectually, to at least understand that they could, you know, you could run afoul of Zelensky for any reason, and he'll go after kids, so you can't tolerate that. He has to be destroyed. And any of his people that make those kinds of threats have to be made an example of. And we're talking mafia-style example of. That's the only logic there to save your own families from this kind of man. But we'll see. I don't think the Europeans are actually mentally proficient enough to think this all the way through, unfortunately. But for Orban, as you can see in this poster, what it says is, are you hungry? Don't forget, Yuzhgorod is, which means southern city in Russian. Yuzhgorod is Hungarian. It's questionable how Hungarian it is. Originally, it wasn't why the city is named with the city's name. But okay, for a long time, it was afterwards. And Borscht is also Hungarian. Well, no, Borscht is Russian. Sorry, you got goulash. Enjoy your goulash. Goulash is good. And don't touch our borscht. It ain't Ukrainian either. Borscht has been around in Russia long before there was such a concept as Ukraine. Kraina, the edge, the hinterland. But hey, but what it does is it gives Orban huge, huge points over his opponent, who, by the way, there's disclosures coming out that he's financed by Zelensky, which makes him radioactive as hell in Hungary, because even Orban's opponents have had to go, you don't get to threaten the life of our prime minister, a Hungarian. You don't get to threaten the life of a Hungarian. Meanwhile, Hungary is building up defensive positions on its border with Ukraine, and quietly, but starting to mass troops on that border. Am I saying they're going to invade tomorrow? I don't know, and probably not, but... at least not until the elections in April. Once Orban is instilled with enough of a mandate, they can easily escalate it. So let's not forget, Zakarpattia, which is about half Hungarian, had a referendum. And all those people, by the way, all those Hungarians are dual passport holders. So whenever they get press ganged or they get killed in the process of getting press ganged, Hungary is quite right saying, you're murdering our citizens. So at this point, all these groups... Ukraine tries to hold on, if Hungary enters Zakarpattia and grabs it, and Ukraine tries to hold on, the local population is going to be against them. And they're going to be facing not just the Hungarian army, they're going to be facing, and to the north, the Slovak army, because there's a chunk of land that Slovakia also claims. But they're going to be facing the population too. So that's going to make it much more difficult. And it's a mountainous, hilly area, Zakarpattia. So going through there for the Ukrainian army is going to be a major headache. They may just have to sign on, right off that area because they're not going to have enough troops to split between both real troops. Now, don't forget, while Ukraine may say we've got a million men, the reality is that they've got about 250,000, 300,000 on the battlefield. They count all the emergency services, the police, these press gangs, they count them all as part of the army. You know, ambulance drivers, fire truck drivers, they count everybody as part of as part of their military. So a very large chunk of the military. And don't forget, even if you're wearing a Ukrainian army uniform, doesn't mean you're a combat soldier. Because no military, it can be built up of only combat soldiers. There has to be the ash and trash in the rear that does the that does everything else to keep the army that's in the front fighting. You know, and there's been, I mean, Ukraine is up in the drone war, though they're not having as nearly the effect that they want, considering how many drones they're attending. Now, Moscow is, just this week, I think, has shut down somewhere around 400 drones heading into southwestern Moscow. What they do normally do, especially when you're heading out of the city, you'll see at the edges of the city or in the suburbs or in the satellite towns to the south, is you'll see hits on residential buildings because they can't get into the city. So if they've gotten that far, they just start aiming for whatever. They can kill some civilians. And they have killed a lot of civilians in general. That's something they target all the time, particularly using FPV drones in border areas to attack civilian automobiles. But that's not the only thing they attack. They've attacked, by the way, there's a Greek tanker that was going into Novorossiysk to fuel up, but not on Russian oil. It was going in to fuel up on the Caspian Authority Consortium, or the Authority Caspian Consortium, something like that. Caspian, okay, well, you get the point. This is a 50% American-owned owned infrastructure that exports Kazakh oil through Novorossiysk. It's been hit quite a few times by the Ukrainians, including its headquarters building in Novorossiysk was hit by Ukrainian drones last year. So this Greek tanker was coming in. It got hit by Ukrainian drones. And again, the EU does not give a damn about its member states or its member states' property. Because did you hear a word about it from the EU? Hell no. Even though they're running out of energy left and right. They've been cut off from the Caspian. They've been cut off from Russian. Well, and by the way, right now is planting season in the EU, and obviously they don't give a damn that they don't have enough fertilizer, and yes, the EU may face the prospect of starvation second half of this year. It may not be mass starvation like in the old days where entire provinces are dying off, but you will have mass starvation in levels of society. There's already a large problem in countries like Italy, which is one of the richer countries, by the way, being able to feed the middle class and particularly lower class people, being able to feed their families all the way through the month. By week four, they're having a lot of problems. Now, food prices are going to skyrocket. Diesel's gotten a lot more expensive. Gas is up almost 100% and will continue climbing because of the hits over the last 2 days on the oil and gas fields. That's not coming back anytime soon from anybody in the Persian Gulf. So we're talking about major price increases. That's going to have an effect on the food and food distribution. And now fertilizer is sky high. By the way, U.S. bought $500 million worth of fertilizer from Russia last year, which is 40% of the chemical fertilizer in the world. Qatar was 30% of the chemical fertilizers, that's the urea chemical fertilizers, which is the main body. So you've got big friggin' problems, and Europe doesn't seem to give a damn. Europe is trying to climb in individually back toward Russia, but I think they're starting to figure out things are not going to ever go back to where they were. Sorry, boys and girls, that train left and the train station's burnt down, and you burnt it down. Macron sent some of his cronies over to try to get in the middle of the negotiation process because, hey, if we're financing Ukraine, we should have a say in it. Yushchenkov said no, and then he told them, all pun intended, it's being said they were told to fuck off. Well, actually, they were told, idite nahui, go jump on a dick, which is worse than being told to go fuck off. And that was the words that Yushchenkov used. Not exactly diplomatic terminology now, is that? That's to tell the French, go bugger yourself, you're no longer part of this issue. We're not talking to you, you don't matter. And if you do something bad enough, you're probably going to get smacked. Because the pressure on the Russian government right now is to emulate what the Iranians have done. The Iranians have smacked around 23 American bases, driven off two aircraft carriers, basically. One in the Red Sea, just north of where the Houthis can pop a missile into it. And the other one on the other side of Amman, not doing anything. It's too far away for the F-35s with their 500-kilometer range. To do anything. It's well over 1,000 kilometers out. So the era of the carrier has been over for a long time on anybody that's even a regional power. And I've been saying this, and many people have been saying this, but nobody wants to believe because normalcy bias. Oh, the carriers. I mean, even the French and the Italians are building new carriers. Why? And Chinese are actually building another carrier. Why? Unless you're going to go bomb a small country that can't fight back, the carrier is worthless. Make a golf course on top of it and let Trump play and scream, we beat the Iranians. That's the reality of it. The carrier is junk. If you're fighting any, I'm not even talking peer level, like Russia or China. I mean, there's Russian attack submarines going behind all of these American carrier groups, shadowing them. And if need be, there would be Zircon missiles coming in at Mach 8. To take out any carrier group if combat actually started. But we're talking about a country like Iran that the carriers don't dare get near because they're going to get destroyed. So there's that. So the carrier's over, but that's the main projection of American power. America is, they may have 2.5 million military, but it's almost all Air Force and Navy. What do you do now? Yeah, what do you do now? Well, you do the Trump stupid thing and possibly throw the infantry into the meat grinder. But again, we'll cover that in a separate video. So Kharkiv and Sumy. I think Sumy is going to be the big battle coming up. Russian forces are about 15 kilometers outside of Sumy and advancing and continuing to advance. Slow advance again because the terrain there is better. It's more forested, it's firmer ground, but again, it's still a lot of mud, especially if you're going over the fields. So they are continuously, however, moving to advance and taking a buffer zone on all of the border areas. And that's expanding in every direction. So I think Sumy is going to be the next big loss for the Ukraine, before Konstantinovka even. Konstantinovka, they've thrown a lot into the fight. They don't have that much to throw into the Sumy fight. But Sumy, once cut off, that will be the western supply routes into Kharkiv. It's a very wide encirclement of Kharkiv. So we'll see. The spring offensive has not started yet. A lot of people, it started. No, it has not. Sometime in April, possibly early April, it'll start. And then it depends because Orthodox Easter, Pascha, is the 12th of April. So it may start before, it may start after. There may be a one-sided ceasefire again for Easter that Russia does every year. And Ukraine, the Ukrainian heretics there continue throwing in people screaming, we're Orthodox, we're going to fight on Easter. There is that moment that we deal with all the time. So what else? What else have we got? Oryokhov is now under Russian FPV control. So getting any kind of supplies in has become very difficult. Russian forces are on the edges of Oryokhov in the south, maybe even within the city limits. And again, drones easily cover. And from the western side, the approaches also, drones are covering those approach. It's more of a extreme range for those drones than the Russian drones coming from the south, just covering the northern approaches. But they are covering those main roads coming into Oryokhov. So Oryokhov effectively is already under siege, and it just hasn't really been invested yet. I'm sure that will come once the ground dries out in the next two to three weeks. But Iran will continue sucking all the oxygen out of the room, because Iran is the battle that may kill the American empire, more or less. It's not going to be in one hit, but it'll be such damage that the U.S. will probably never recover from it again. That's what happens. This is why historically empires and big governments have always attempted to not engage in major battles. And Iran is just one big major battle, because their entire empire could collapse from one major loss. They did skirmishes, they did small battles that they could recover from. They did lots of maneuvers, lots of pressures, raids, but they tended to walk around major battles. That's why in history you'll see a lot of times where two major armies just sit there facing each other and waiting to see whose food supplies run out first and they leave. Because a major battle, you're throwing everything on the dice. But yeah, but the all-powerful, all-knowing God Emperor of Humanity has decided to do that in Iran. And believe you me, Zelensky and his crew are going to be suffering from it. And the Ukrainian front is already suffering from it. And yes, Russia is supplying Iran with drones, with targeting and everything else. And why not? It's fair play. It's karma. Since the U.S. has been doing the exact same thing. And the U.S. is now, American HIMARS fired by American military, even if they're sheep-dipped into mercenaries, are hitting Russian cities and hospitals. Like I said, two hospitals in Donetsk that were hit. One of them, thankfully, was closed for repairs. The children's hospital and another hospital was very active when it was hit. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, this is a short video because, you know, there's Iran and there's the Rasputitsa, which means the muddy season where everything goes apart and you can't connect with people because it's an all-in-one. Yeah, we'll continue concentrating on Iran for now, but that's where we're at right now. God bless, and we'll see what happens. Hopefully, we'll still all be here for the next video. If Trump doesn't, and Israel doesn't, don't do anything too stupid. They do lots of stupid things, but there's always something worse. Hit like. By all means, please hit like. That helps the video go far. Subscribe. Grow the channel, and it helps me be able to bring more content to you. God bless. Cheers.